in awe and thrilling new living sound.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to hour number two of Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, Matt Fontana, 216-578-0850. You can call us up. Yesterday we talked a little bit about Matt Bowen's article and about how the offseason program and the new CBA is a disaster for rookies. It's brutal on quarterbacks. And in this one, he's saying, talking about how NFL veterans are affected by the condensed offseason program. And he talks about the late start. And then he gets into a period, technique concerns. So this is what he says about technique. And then I want to find out from you, what does this mean? Because we hear technique in so many different ways relating to the National Football League. Here's what Matt Bowens writes. Technique is often a major concern for rookies transitioning to the NFL, but those shortcomings are expected coming from college. That's why we use the term development so much throughout the draft process. But as technique we see on Sundays becoming an issue, from press man to tackling to offensive line play, it is easy to identify technique errors when you turn on NFL tape. A few examples. Defensive backs opening the gate all day in press. Too many missed tackles. Offensive tackles struggling against speed rushers. Now, that doesn't mean we don't see great technique. There's plenty of that, too. But overall, the coaches and scouts I talked to see the technique, the core fundamentals, sliding downhill a bit. An NFL coach told him, quote, there is no such thing as technique anymore. It's all height, weight, speed, measurables. He wonders if some of this can be traced back to the late start of the offseason program, then the transition into training camp setting that lacks the amount of reps and competition under the previous CBA. So let's just talk about technique. When you hear that, what does that mean to you?
It means all the little things. Because this is, and this is a battle that every position coach has, and they have to truly understand a few things. Who makes up my room? Meaning, what were their past defenses that they played in, either in college or you know, maybe a past coordinator, or what's their history? Okay. Because you have to take for granted at some point to get to this level, to get into that room, you got to be pretty dang good at something, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Either at the college level or, you know, getting undrafted, getting your shot and proving it. And then you also have to understand, and this is, I'm kind of in the midst of this now, is how do these young men learn? Because there are individuals that getting the actual rep at practice and then watching it is how they fix it. Some are whiteboard people. Some are, you know, meticulous note takers, which is how they learn. And then they take their notes to the field. So I think a coach needs to understand those things. And in that same article, I think it's so right and such a great article and a reference point, you know, to understand this, because if I were learning something new and I have, and like I said, as a coach, you have to understand those eight minds, how they learn and what they know. You take for granted a lot of things, because when you really get down to it, that coach is really only coaching four players. The starters and the backups, or the starters and a backup who would probably be the first guy off the bench had one of those two get injured. Sure. And that was, I was the starter at some point in my career, and then I was always either that third or that fourth guy who was one play or two plays away that would have to go in. You have to understand how they learn and what they know. And I guess so much emphasis in today's world is who's got the thickest playbook. And so there's the memorization that comes with learning the playbook.
Yeah.
And it's learning that, to be able to go out on the field and just get lined up right. You know, I think, and I'll go back and I'll talk about old regimes. I don't care. I remember Brian Hartline having to line up Marlon Moore in an actual football game in First Energy Stadium because Marlon Moore wasn't playing a lot of wide receiver. And I'm not talking smack, but he was
right.
They dug deep into the playbook, and he didn't know where to line up. So Hartline was lining him up. So my whole point is the playbooks are so thick, you need to know what it is. You identify the play in your mind, and then you go, okay, I line up here at this place, and then I run this route, okay? Ask a wide receiver how many different ways or speeds or depths do they need to know. I talk about this on defense. You have to understand where you're at on the field. Are you on the hash? You know, What's the down and distance? What's the tendency in this personnel grouping? You know, and then I even go even furthermore, you know, the one tendency breaker was when Tony Gonzalez, when we played, he played for the Chiefs, lines up in this position, it's 90%. So there's all those little things that you get to. And then I haven't even got into my stance. You know, do I boss or do I bow based on a formation? My hand placement, when a guard attacks me, I take on a block this way. This is where we're getting into the technique. Yeah, when a guard comes gets up on me, I attack him this way. I want to put my hand, this hand here. I want to strike with my face mask? Do I not? Okay, but what if the guard doesn't block me? What if a fullback comes up on me? Do I spill it, you know, out to the safety, or do I splatter it back to my other linebacker? Do I use my wrong shoulder? Do I use my right shoulder? All those little technique, it's like, because you've taken the pads off these guys so much, it's so hard to get the repetitive screw up to the point where you fix it, if that makes sense. Where you do it wrong, I fix it. You do it wrong again, I fix it that second time, but now I've got it, coach. And then you do it right, you do it right, do it right. There's so many, and I'd be interested to ask any NFL coach that's been coaching under this new collective bargaining agreement is, how hard is it to have guys make the same mistake? Because you want sometimes to make the same mistake, because you might make a mistake in practice, you then talk about it in the meeting room. The next time you might see that formation to allow you to either fix that mistake or make that mistake might be in a game.
Right.
Because there are so few reps that you got with pads on that the next time you see that formation with that personnel grouping and they run that play and you're supposed to execute that technique, that might be 3 months ago, you know, on the first day of training camp, and now you're getting it, you know, week 7 of the NFL. And you have to recall that mistake, been coached, and then do it right that time when your tendency the first time around was to mess it up. So it's the repetition in these little nuanced technique-type situations where, you know, you hit the bag. It's, I mean, to the point, it's 9-on-7. You can fit your run defense against an offensive play like clockwork when you rep it, because there's nowhere else to go. It's to the point where when I was a linebacker, it's like, go to the air. Because that's the one thing, and I remember Donnie Edwards, who's a linebacker in Kansas City, then San Diego, then back to Kansas City, was kind of like my mentor early in my career. And he said, the one thing you'll notice, and it was so true, is how clean an NFL practice truly is. And that goes back to the point where I say that one guy not in his gap, that running back will find that gap and gash you for a chunk run.
Yep.
It's just one guy. And so it was so clean that when you were at linebacker, when it wasn't clean, you know somebody didn't do their job. And that's when you can call out the nose tackle for getting hooked or the three technique for getting doubled and letting that guard up, you know, scot-free on you. And it's like, why do I have someone in my face? The ball was it's little things, like little technique things that you have to rep. They're not allowing them the opportunity to rep those little things. And if a coach, if he doesn't see those little things get messed up because they don't have the reps, guess what? He doesn't coach it. He moves on to the next defensive install or the next, you know, personnel grouping that they're going to get and the concepts that they like out of those.
Absolutely.
So there's just little things that are just being overlooked because you don't have the time to go through it. And that goes back to the point where, how is a rookie supposed to know that? You know, how is a sixth, seventh round pick who's, you know, a third stringer in one rep supposed to get what a vet or a second team guy gets in a dozen reps? And the mental, get your mental reps. There's nothing that can replace doing it and seeing yourself do it to then go back and fix it on the film.
Well, this is what he said. A veteran NFL player told me recently, quote, "I didn't like two-a-days, but they made me a better football player. You can never have enough reps." And Bowen says, "I was a strong believer in that statement. Despite the NFL's PR stance on player safety, yes, two-a-days were physical, but I also saw that as a path to better technique with more reps to mold players. Better technique leads to safer tackling and safer football from my perspective when talking about the core fundamentals of those games." He said, "But to clean those up, to fine-tune your craft as a player, you've got to be on the field in competitive situations, and those situations or reps have been significantly reduced under the current CBA.
Let me ask you this question, Nathan. I'll interrupt. And this is just relevant to essentially my second career as I'm starting, you know, starting it and doing what I do. Am I better today than I was the day that I walked in here to do the show with you?
Of course.
Of course. And why?
Reps.
Reps. I do reps. This every day, 5 days a week, 2 hours a day, over and over and over and over and over and over again to get to the point where you are. And if you talk to anybody, and you know this because you've been doing it a hell of a lot longer than I have, talk to an agent and go, I want to go national. And they're going to ask you, what reps are you getting?
You got to get your reps.
Got to get your reps. How can we get you more? How can we get you more reps doing this, doing that, doing what? That's exactly the same thing that these football guys are missing out on now.
So have the players, but this is because of the players. So have the players gone too far?
Yes. I believe so. And I think it's going to take a multi-tiered level of voices to impact the powerful voices that put this into play. It's going to take the young players, the undrafted free agents, the guys who are, you know, negatively affected by this new CBA.
I think everybody
talking to their agents, talking to the player reps on the team, talking to the NFLPA, talking to their coaches. So the point, there's so many voices reverberating the same message that those, because this was the, as I said, fourth year guy to the 10th year guy who, I've been there, I've done it. I need some time off. I don't need to be doing the same thing over and over again. Okay, well, what about?
But you do.
But your future is rookie, first year, second year, third year player, as those guys are becoming the face of your franchise and the next guy in line, just like you were, to get that big contract extension. That's their opportunity. Those guys in year two, three, four, that second, everyone, second, just get to a second contract, baby.
Just think
make all your money in a second contract.
Just think about how many more reps they would get if they got to practice with the coaches throughout this whole period.
Yeah.
Like maybe you could get a week off or 2 weeks off, but I mean they're off for a long time before training camp.
They are, and that was always, you know, and we had, I mean, for God's sakes, we did a show that talked about what was the message that Hugh Jackson gave these guys when given this time, and I talked about all the things that I would want to, you know, say to them and to build trust for these guys to be pros. You know, this is a young roster who've never had that amount of money in their pocket before.
Sure.
As these rookies are getting, you know, contracts and hundreds of thousands of dollars direct deposit into their account. Some will buy houses. Some will buy cars. Some will go act stupid with it. Yeah. It's just true. It's fact.
Absolutely.
You know, and the more you can create these guys, and I don't remember that. It was John Harbaugh. With the Baltimore Ravens, talked about the safest place for these guys to be
is here,
is in and around the building that they work in, you know, what, 7 months out of the year.
Sure.
To keep them close, to limit their amount of outside exposure to the real world.
I mean, I think what do you think is the right thing to do? Kind of reduce the time off between mini camp and training camp? Extend that, or what do you think is the happy medium? Allow them to do two-a-days in training camp?
I would say they need more time in pads. And I hate to say it. That doesn't mean when you're in pads, that doesn't mean you're banging, boom, like, you know, running into each other. It's not nutcracker. It's competing in pads. And I think it's everything that Hugh Jackson has said. To get better at playing the game of football, you've got to replicate playing the game of football. How do you do that? Do you play it in shorts and t-shirts? No.
And
going three-quarter speed? No, you do it with a helmet, shoulder pads on.
And there are limits to how much they can practice in pads.
You can't go two consecutive practices in a row in pads.
Yeah, and I think during the season you're allowed like less than one a week.
Right. And be honest, there
it's
were
more important now though, right, than in the season, because in the season isn't that kind of just preparation.
Yeah,
Wednesday,
but you
Thursday,
also want to keep your edge though.
Okay.
You know, you can't go, I mean, but I've been on every side of this.
Okay.
I've been with Marty Schottenheimer was a coach who we were in padded. You know, we were bad my rookie year. We were in pads all season long. We won the next year, and then it became – but it's a lot of proving. You got to prove to the coach that, okay,
you deserve that
we are not – there was no physical drop-off by his reward of a victory Monday and then having us in shells, you know, half the practice and then pads half the practice. There's no drop-off. So if guys keep the pedal to the metal, and I think what this collective bargaining agreement really has become with the, you know, the lack of emphasis on pads and being in pads and taking it so easy is it was a lot of people whining and complaining of influence and then pushing this through.
Well, and
not really thinking it all the way through.
You hear a lot of veterans say, you know, I'm thinking of retiring because I just don't like the off-season grind.
Right.
And it seems, compared to what you went through, this is would be anything but a grind.
Well, here's and this is another way that you can essentially, I mean, I'm kind of flying off the cuff here, but for those that don't know, you're only paid. So if I make $10 million, I make my $10 million between September and December.
Game one and
so
game
So I'm only 17. Paid between game one and game 17, okay? So the mind naturally thinks that if I get paid for September through December, everything else is like, I mean, guys make $4,000 or $5,000 for this other stuff, right? A workout's $130. A mini camp, you might make $1,000 on a weekend. It's like, that's peanuts.
Insulting.
That's peanuts to someone who's making the kind of money that some of these guys are making. But yet the emphasis for the guy who's not, it's huge.
Sure.
So I guess what you could do is if you really wanted to, the mental aspect of having these guys earn that $10 million over 12 months to take it on like a true job.
Yeah.
And to approach the offseason and mini camps and OTAs and training camp as, hey, I'm making $39,000on January 15th, the same that I am on September 15th after a football game.
Would you have wanted that as a player to get paid basically on a normalized, like once a month?
I would
have,
and I think it's actually smarter for the players because, you know, there's when you think professional athlete, you think troubles with money, you know, because guys don't know how to manage their money.
Yeah.
So it's easy to spend when it's coming, but when you feel like you have it, you never change that mindset to, I'm not earning it anymore at the same rate, but I'm still living lavishly. That car payment doesn't go away,
right?
You know, in March, April, May, June, July, when you're not making, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. So it's just siphoning away that if you were able, I just think it's better planning. And I would imagine that a financial planner would say the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, and that's why you see a lot of those guys, you know, that's why they try to work on those workout bonuses so that they do have something coming in the offseason. I think it's interesting. G.I. George is the one who said, what's the happy medium? I think that there needs to be, even if just training camp had 2-a-days, it seems to me like that would get a lot more. You're doubling the reps at the most critical time, so that probably would be enough.
And I wouldn't even be surprised if it was, you know, 2-a-day, and then you can go 2-a-day, but 2-a-day, 2 padded practices, and then morning is like a walkthrough and then a padded practice in the evening that next day. And then, or something of that sort. So like every third day, you were essentially able to have a double day.
Yep.
Because there's something to be said. It's training camp. It's the equivalent to boot camp.
That's what it's supposed to
why be. Why is Bud's training as you become, you know, they whittle out those that can make it through Bud's to wear one of the highest, you know, most renowned positions in our military of being a Navy SEAL or the Green Beret or whatever it might be, or the Army Ranger, those elite status, they've taken away the elite status of making it to the NFL by whittling down the process to eliminate the weak, to eliminate those that just aren't able to play. So
right.
They slip through the cracks and they take the field in the first 4 weeks of the season, make a bunch of mistakes, guys get cut, and you forever judge them based on, you know, those first 4 weeks.
When they might not even have been prepared.
Correct.
And it is interesting because I'd imagine for a guy like Sashi and for Andrew Berry, it makes it tougher to evaluate the talent on your own roster because you're just not seeing these guys in enough reps and enough competitive situations. What do you think? 216-578-0850. Call us up. We've got some tweets that we can get into. And we also have the system guy or star, NFL.com, talking about if certain guys are true stars or if their system, their products of their system. We'll give you our take on that when we return.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zgura, Matt Wilhelm, 216-578-0850. And we go to the tweets now as we got some rolling in. We'll bring in our producer, Matt Fontana, with some people's Browns questions. What's up, Fontana?
What's up, guys?
Fontana, I got some tweets today. Is it true that it was Riz talking trash about my golf game?
He wasn't talking trash. He was just saying that he's striking it pretty well right now. So, obviously, we've been teasing for a while our potential.
Are we going to do it?
I mean, we do need to do it.
Yeah.
I think we just
What's Riz's handicap?
You know, that's a good question. I would have to say probably a 7, I think.
Okay. All right.
So I would say let's probably we'll go with that. But
I'm at 1 right now. My putting is great right now. My ball striking is a little shady.
Well, yeah, Riz is playing really well right now.
Little
so I
rat.
Think he might be able to. That's the other thing too. We got to figure out the format. Is it going to be a show versus show thing?
Okay, we'll figure. We're open to it. Just let it be known that we're open to it.
I will. Pass
we are not afraid.
I will pass the message along. This is a tweet coming in, guys, from Sean. He says, "I've been noticing more about the alumni with the picture of Bernie getting out. It's good to see them get back into the fold. What do you think changed?"
I think that it just with Hugh Jackson coming in and PJB,
it matters to somebody.
It matters,
and that somebody. Is someone of influence, and he's making it happen.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think the person that it matters to, you know, Jim Brown's taking a prominent role. I think it matters to Jimmy and D, and it matters certainly to PJB. And it's just a thing that I think the alumni relations with the Browns got a little bit fractured, and it's such an easy fix, and it's something that's been worked on. Kevin Mack in the alumni relations department, PJB, and, of course, head coach Hugh Jackson, obviously at the forefront of that. And I think they've done a great job, and it's been something that you've seen a lot more of, just being around the building in Berea, all the alumni out at the practices. It just seems to be a better situation, which is a great thing.
This one comes from Cyber Tiger, guys. He said, "Are you going to keep McCown, Davis, or Shaw?" And then he also asked, "Is there a possibility to pick up another corner if Hayden is not back and if Justin Gilbert can't cut it?"
McCown. And I would believe that we thought the cornerback position, Nathan, was going to be one of the most competitive rooms on this roster. So I don't think the need is not to go find a guy. If Joe Hayden is not ready, you have a guy ready.
So when first of all, quarterback McCown's going to make it. I think that you could see Connor ending up on the practice squad again. Austin Davis is certainly in the mix because he's young, but he's going to have to clearly, I think, be on McCown's level. And what we saw last year wouldn't indicate that he is. Now, obviously, he can improve. For the cornerback room, I think that's the toughest one already. You've got Hayden and Tremont. You've got Gilbert and Desir. You've got Kaywan Williams. You've got Charles Gaines. You've got Jamar Taylor. You just drafted Trey Caldwell this year. You've got a lot of corners already in that room. I don't think you need to add another as much as you need to figure out who's going to make your team. I think that those are going to be some of the more interesting battles this year.
All right, guys. So you can tweet your questions at Browns_daily. This one's from John, guys. Odds that Josh Gordon gets reinstated before the start of the season?
I would say odds that he gets reinstated, I'm going to go with 25% chance that Josh Gordon is reinstated before the start of the season. And a lot of that has to just come from, I haven't heard much, but I guess they gave him the extra 6 months because, A, he didn't do enough to prove to them. So if he does in fact give them enough to prove that he's clean and he is deserving, that in my eyes is there's a 25% chance that happens.
Yeah, I'm going to put it at about 20%. I just think that his friends, certainly you know who on Twitter or Instagram or wherever he is, not doing him any favors wearing his jersey and all that kind of nonsense and them being seen together. But I hope that it's higher than that because I really do think Josh is a good guy. But, you know, it's interesting just talking to the kids today out the Hawkins Sports Camp about Josh Gordon. When a guy's as good as he was, you would think like the kids would be off. They just are like, listen, man, this guy's got to get his life together. He's got to make the right decision so that he can play. One of your best abilities is availability, dependability. And so far, Josh Gordon has shown to be a phenomenal talent, but he's been a mercurial talent, and you don't know that you can count on him. I'll say 20%. I think the more interesting question is if he gets reinstated, then what happens? Do they play him? Do they play him to trade him? Do they play him to keep him? Do they give him like a year like, all right, we're going to play you and see what happens? Do they say, look, we're trading you right out of the gate because you don't fit with what we're trying to build here? That, I think, is the more fascinating question. I don't know the answer to that at all.
I don't either. And going back, last time we talked about this, I just thought that Sashi, Hugh Jackson, Jimmy Haslam all need to be on the same page in regards to how they approach Josh Gordon if he is, in fact, reinstated. And I would imagine him coming here and them spending time with him, more than just an hour, two-hour meeting, but a day or two to allow him to feel comfortable almost that the door is eking open for him to get comfortable to, and then it allow us to evaluate his true colors. Do they shine through? Is he gonna walk the walk that Hugh Jackson and Sashi Brown have now set forth here in Cleveland? It's a different walk than it has been for him in Cleveland since he was originally here.
It's going to be more demanding, and it'll be interesting to see how he fits in. I hope we get to find out. For his case, for the Browns' case, I hope we get to find out, and Josh Gordon does get reinstated.
Speaking of wide receivers, guys, this comes from Browns Guy Bible. He says, guys, how's Terrell Pryor looking at wide receiver? How much do you feel that he could be an impact player for this team?
If you would have asked me at the beginning of the offseason if I thought he had a chance to make it, no. I would have said no. Now, I think he has a good chance to make it and contribute. He has been by far my most improved player on the Browns. By far. I mean, it's night and day. Now, again, this is one of those, let's see when the pads go on. Not to sound cliche, but we need to see what it is when the pads go on.
Yeah, and I think as he's showing what he's showing now, and the ultimate equalizer is, in fact, the pads, but then I need to see, if he's not going to be on this roster, I need to see Higgins, Peyton, Lewis, somebody rise up and be the guy that can knock him off this roster. So he can make it by default if nobody else rises up because they're young. But if Terrell Pryor is not going to make this team, someone else has to be that guy on this roster to knock him off where he sits right now.
Yeah, agreed.
Final one, guys. This one comes from Rob. How's Cam Irving looking at center?
Very good. But as you said with the offensive line, you need to see the pads come on before you know. But he looks natural. He does it. He looks like you watch the offense and you're never like, what's going on at center? He looks like an NFL center. He blends in. The line seems to be working. Seems very comfortable making the calls, working in the middle of the offensive formation. I think he, just as a guy, seems more comfortable.
Sure. I agree. And I've seen the same thing. And there's something to be said when you finally just find your spot. And I think for him at the collegiate level, he excelled everywhere, but that was at the collegiate level and his talent was superior. There's just something that comes when the coaches think it's perfect for you and you think it's perfect for yourself, how it just naturally becomes who you are. And I think that's what we're finding happening with Cam Irving. And ultimately the drafting of Cam Irving is now genius with Alex Mack taking the money and running to Atlanta.
Exactly. I think now it looks good. And that was what it was at the time. If you remember, he was the only offensive lineman I wanted because of this contingency. Then the way that he performed last year at guard, which again, a position he had never played, people got nervous. But I think he's back at his natural position. And I think he is somebody that you'll be very pleased with when you come out to training camp this year and the pads do come on. Because I've been told, we talk about technique, his technique much improved and much more natural for him at center. He had to learn a whole new technique. I remember you telling me that the differences between in the 3-4 as an inside linebacker, depending on certain formations, certain coverages, depending on certain personnel groups, the techniques were different for every play.
Absolutely.
But you'd been playing in inside linebacker, granted, you were in a 4-3 at Ohio State, so you're the true Mike, but you've been playing linebacker your whole college career.
Correct.
He had never played guard ever
right
in his life. So I think that's tough to come and try to do it in the highest level against the best in the world who do
it. I agree.
So I think he is going to be much, much better. All right. When we come back, we're going to talk about guys. Are they system players or are they legit superstars? We'll talk about that right after this.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
All right, so NFL.com, much like us, coming up with, you know, NFL topics to go through this time of the year when there's nothing, you know, not as much going on. And one of the things that they did is Bucky Brooks wrote an article looking at 10 players in the NFL. The question was, are these guys system guys or are they stars? And Matt, I know you've got some list here of some of the players who are on Bucky Brooks' list, and you can ask us. We'll give our answer, and then I'll also give you Bucky Brooks' answer as well.
Okay, I'll go first.
Josh Norman.
System guy or star?
I think Josh Norman's going to be a star.
Okay.
I really do. I just think he's a great athlete. He's got incredible ball skills. And I don't know how much, and I know that's obviously with Ron Rivera and Sean McDermott down there in Carolina, they weren't playing a whole lot of two, you know, which was like Charles Tillman and the Chicago Bears style of defense. He was a little bit more man-to-man over there in Carolina.
So the knock on him, and Bucky Brooks calls him a system guy, the knock on him is that he is a, quote, clue corner, adept at pattern reading and keying the quarterback from distance in a zone scheme that enables him to play with vision from off coverage. Now, he did start to play more bump and run, as you pointed out last year. He matched up with Dez, Beckham, Julio Jones at the line of scrimmage in recent years. Kind of up and down. I think he's going to be a star, but I do think we will have a very good, like a definitive answer to this question when we come back from the end of this season, because he's going to be asked to play a lot more man-to-man, and he's going to be in that division going against Odell Beckham twice a year. We already know he's got that issue. Dez twice a year. So he's going to get some pretty good matchups.
Number two.
This one, I'm very interested to hear you guys answer on this one. System guy or star, Julian Edelman.
Oh, he is a system guy. He is a system guy, and there's no knock about that. You think Wes Welker, system guy. Danny Amendola, system guy. And if you were to ask him, I hope he would claim that he's a system guy and that Tom Brady has made him great and made him the name that he is, because I don't necessarily know. And I'll go back to my story. San Diego Chargers, my class 2003, we signed Wes Welker as an undrafted free agent out of Texas Tech and cut him. He then went on to Miami, became the punt returner, a system guy there, and then ended up in New England being a system guy there, went to Denver, and was a system guy there. There's nothing wrong with being a system guy, and I think Julian Edelman is just the epitome of a system guy with a great quarterback.
The perfect guy for that system. The skill set that he brings is exactly what they need to complement Rob Gronkowski. He's like when you go – Julian Edelman is like when you go to a steakhouse and you get the ribeye. He's like – the side of mashed potatoes. Now, a lot of people could ultimately be the mashed potatoes. You're there for the steak, but, man, he's pretty good mashed potatoes. He's a system guy. He's just a piece of the puzzle there, but he's very effective in it. You take him out of there and ask him to come here and be the number one or number two receiver, not going to be as effective.
I mean, Brandon Stokely in Indianapolis.
Right.
With Peyton Manning. You had Marvin. You had Reggie. You had Dallas Clark, but you needed Brandon Stokely to play his role.
Yes.
Number three,
Kirk Cousins, system guy or star?
He's not a star, not yet. And I can't necessarily say he's even a system guy.
He's just a guy.
He's a guy who had a great year on a good team. And he's a wait and see for me. Because I can't necessarily say that system in Washington is overwhelming with talent. You got, you know, DeSean Jackson. You got, what is it, Jordan Reed, the tight end? He's a good player.
Pierre Garçon
is a good player.
Josh Dotson.
Yeah, well, it's yet to be determined. But my whole point, if he can do it again, I would say budding star.
I don't know. I don't think he's a system guy or a star right now. I don't think we know. I think he's a guy who had one good year in the NFL. Can he have two? That's my question. Is he anything?
Right.
Is he
Number
anything?
Four.
DeAndre Hopkins.
Star. Period. Point blank. Yeah. Star. He could be successful in any system as an outside wide receiver. He's an absolute beast. He can beat double teams, and he had to last year. They didn't have anybody opposite. That's why they went out and drafted Will Fuller to try to open up the other side of the field. The guy is an absolute beast star, and is going to – his star is on the rise.
Yeah, I like him as a player, and I would say star as well. He was the second reason I would ever watch the Houston Texans. One, J.J. Watt. The offensive reason I watched the Houston Texans. Didn't matter who the quarterback was. Brandon Weeden, Brian Hoyer, Brock Osweiler. Ryan. It didn't matter. He was making plays regardless of who the quarterback was.
He's a stud.
Star.
Number five.
I have an answer to this one, too. But okay. I'll hear you guys first. Andrew Luck.
I mean, he's a star. He's already played in multiple systems, so he doesn't even have one system that he's played in. He is a stud. And last year he had a tough year. The injuries, he struggled. But this guy is an absolute stud.
I'm going to say star. I mean, he's not going to make the most money in NFL history, guaranteed or full contract term, because he's a system guy. So he's a star.
I was also going to say star. I was interested to see if either one of you guys would have said system guy.
No.
Luck's a beast. I agree. So we don't have a number six, so I'm just going to move on to number six. And that is LeSean McCoy, system guy or star?
I think his best days are behind him. I'm going to say neither. I don't think he's a star anymore at this point, and I don't think he's a system guy either. I know that he had his last good year was in that Chip Kelly system, but I don't think he is a star anymore. And I know he was actually pretty productive over the second half of last season. I know fantasy players would say that he was pretty productive, but I don't think he's a star or a system guy. I think he's just a very solid veteran at this point.
I'm going to say star.
Okay.
I'm going to say star just simply, you know, banking on the fact, and you brought it up, that he did have a solid second half. He's been injury-plagued with some, like, rinky-dinky little injuries that have limited his ability to be the star that I think he can be. You know, that cut on a dime, elusive player out in space. Same way we're going to use – he's a older version of Duke Johnson, or Duke Johnson is a younger version of him, which is obviously, you know, arrow pointing up. But I would say in that Bill system with Rex Ryan's, you know, want to run the football and dominate people on the ground, he's their best opportunity to do so.
You're going to need to. And they had Carlos Williams, who came in last year, the rookie, very productive. I think scored in each of his first six games last year. But LeSean McCoy is still a very good player, but I don't know that I would consider him a star anymore. I don't even think
I won't say a star in the NFL, you know, as you look at the name, like the top 10, 15 stars in the NFL. But he's a star on that team and maybe even a star in that division if he can play the way we know he can play.
Very fair. Very fair. All right, that'll do it for star or system guy. What RG3 is trying to prove is that his year where he was a rookie of the year, he's not a system guy, that he can be a star, and we'll find out if he can do that with Hugh Jackson here in 2016. The NFL also tweeting out just a moment ago, they had an article, 4 comeback player of the year candidates. Dez Bryant, RG3 are 2 of those comeback of the year player of the year candidates. So RG3 certainly has the chance. If he could go from being a guy who was inactive for every game after being rookie of the year, comes back and plays well this year, certainly has an opportunity to steal that one. All right, when we come back, we'll wrap it up with our final thoughts here on Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Wrapping it up here on this hump day edition of CBD, Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm. And tomorrow, Matt, is our summer of back and forthiness goes on. You're out. Jim Donovan will be on the show with me tomorrow. And then I don't even know what's happening on Friday, but I know I'll be here on Friday. And then it's the big week, birthday week for me.
It's awesome.
Then
happy
a little
birthday,
trip to
man.
California. Thank you. I'm excited. A little trip to California. See Vince Conti, friend of the show. Always a pleasure.
Are you, who in your life, like, do your parents still get you gifts?
Who still gets me birthday gifts?
Yeah. Like, you know.
Yeah, my mom.
Will any of your friends, like, will a kid get you, like, a gag gift or anything?
Yeah, I think okay. Maybe, like, maybe a little
like a picture of Oprah or signed
yeah,
or something?
Yeah,
okay.
Something. Yeah. Yeah, something like that. Yeah. So, like, probably a couple of my friends will give me something. And then, you know, my mom got me a sectional couch. But she bought it for me like 4 months ago and then was like, this is for your
birthday. Advance.
I'm like, fine.
Yeah, awesome.
Deal. Great.
You know what's so funny is I would rather like tell my parents, you know, because they always want to get you something. But sometimes like, you know, you're a grown man with kids now. Like, what do you get a grown man with kids who they think has everything? I tell them what I want and like, or at least I tell my wife. Then my wife tells my mom and my mom and dad will like, you know, get me what I want. Like for Father's Day.
It's the best.
We just got the deck done, you know, we got new outdoor furniture. I was like, I need a leaf blower. Like, I need a blower to keep all this clean now that it's, like, getting great. So my mom got me a blower for Father's Day. She's like, a little birdie told me so. I'm like, thank you.
Well, if anybody of my family's listening, I want one of those, like, Bushnell range finders, you know, that you, like, on the golf course where you, like, get it right on.
Don't get the one that's – get the one that's – the one closer to 800 than 400 because I'm sure it's not up to your standards.
No, I just want one that gives me the yardage. I'm flying blind out there right now. I got nothing.
Really?
I lost my laser. Yeah, me and that laser gun on the golf course, like when we get out there and have a good time, you somehow forget the laser gun places and then it never shows up again. So that's what happens.
I've been known to leave.
In the market.
Like I've actually lost my – I had the Golf Logics, which was like the digital one. It wasn't the rangefinder, but it just gave yardage because you download the courses.
Yeah, right.
And I lost it three times and then finally lost it a fourth. But I always like I take it out to the tee box and then leave it on
then
like
you put it down,
put it down,
leave.
Hit my shot, boom, great shot, whoa, back in the cart, zoom,
yep.
And then I'd circle back and found it three times and finally lost it.
That's yeah, I'd lost that gun, lost in quotes, probably 50 times, but I'd always go back and get it. And then one time too many, it was gone. All right, Mateo, enjoy your vacation,
thank you, man.
Your trip, my brother. Stay tuned for the Golden Boys for Matt Fontana and Matt Wilhelm. I'm Nathan Zagura saying thanks for the calls. Thanks to John Moon Mullen, by the way. The guy was strong. Thanks for listening to another edition of Cleveland Browns Daily.
On ESPN 850 WKNR.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.